The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Greg, and Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is Footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
What up, Primers? It's a long weekend, so we thought we'd put together... Thank you, Charlie. We thought we'd put together a best-of episode of the last week that was, with some big questions, some broads, and some Brennan running down the pitch and struggling to breathe, but scoring on a pen! Enjoy!
What a weekend it was. Now, we got to start. I don't know about you guys. I felt so proud on Friday when I saw these... I wasn't at the game, but I saw these snapshots and videos and etc. coming down from a packed BMO field. Because I like to think that we're the people that made Jimmy Brennan who he is. And then we get to see this, the adoration cast down towards our Jimbo as TFC's All-Stars play Brazil's All-Stars. Jimmy Brennan on the pitch with some of the greatest players of the modern era, including Ronaldinho, who kind of overshadowed everyone else, it seemed, from what I saw. Everyone was there to see Ronaldinho, but there's a picture we put on the dark web, and then we put it on our various social channels, of Jimmy and Ronaldinho. It's a great picture. Like, it's a really great picture. But Jimmy, tell us, I mean, how was that as a whole? How was the whole night?
Yeah, it was okay.
You know? Great content.
Yeah. You know, it was all right, whatever. No, it was amazing. It really was. You know, from the Thursday night where we all went out together, the Brazilian team and the TFC team, we went out for dinner. That just got the ball rolling. And then obviously for the match was, it was incredible. It was so much fun. I was thinking to myself, I was only going to last maybe 10 minutes, 10, 15. I was like, that's it, me. I'm finished. But then when you get out there, you start knocking the ball and it's a good little standard. You know, it's not crazy. Guys aren't going over the top. And I ended up playing 50 minutes. Now, I paid for it over the last 2 days. My back, my hamstrings, I'm in bits. Like, I'm walking like I'm 80. But the whole occasion, the event, it was first class. It was really good. You could see just even in the dressing room, the guys were just excited just to be back in the dressing room, getting changed, right? Going back to your old routines that you used to have. And then just seeing a lot of familiar faces that I haven't seen in so long. And then walking out to the pitch, 35,000 people there. And it really was a lot of fun. It was great banter on the pitch as well. Obviously, everybody hammering the referee, which we do all of us. During the match, just standing in the middle, the center circle, having a chat with Ronaldinho and asking him, hey, how are you enjoying yourself? He goes, oh, I love it. I love this city, man. He goes, you going to party with us after? I was like, buddy, no, I'm going to the Brazen Head. I'm going to have some chicken wings. I'm going home because I'm knackered. But he loved the city. He loved it. Absolutely loved it and had a great time. The whole game, he was just smiling, laughing. And, you know, sometimes when you play against guys like that, you think, you know, they got this ego and they're above everybody else. But you get to know that individual, and what a chilled, happy-go-lucky guy, man. He was awesome. Really, really cool. And it was so much fun.
I get the impression that Ronaldinho loves every city he goes to.
Oh, 100%.
He has a good time. He's one of those guys. I mean, watching him play throughout his career, I know he had that look, that profile, that face, that he's always smiling, but he seemed to genuinely always enjoy playing football. No one played with more joy than Ronaldinho. And that continues now as he gets into his, what is it? How old is he now? Is he mid-40s?
I don't know. I didn't ask him. I should have asked him. I asked him quite a bit, but that was one thing I didn't
say. Jimmy was too busy breathing out his ass.
It was.
When did you claw out of his pocket? No, I mean, he's still got it though, right? The touch?
46.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
46. Wow.
Yeah, he's got a great little touch and he still has that little move that sends you the opposite way. He sent me the opposite way. Went around me and I was like, fuck, you know, this guy still got it.
Did you catch him?
No, you nuts, man. I didn't catch anybody.
Did he do the Jimmy? Did he drop the shoulder at anybody?
Yeah. I did. I once or twice just dropped the little
move?
Shoulder. And
yeah, the move. The move.
And then, yeah, and then sprayed it.
Somewhere in Germany.
I was like a sprinkler. Like just spraying.
Jimmy, I have a couple of questions for you. One, did you wear underwear? What do you wear when you're playing? Or do you go commando?
Yeah, no, I have to because otherwise it's...
Jingling.
Yeah, you're juggling with your knees after.
Yeah. Good for you. Congratulations. Number two, rank the events. Playing with Ronaldinho, scoring that goal on the PK, or having 30,000 people sing happy birthday to you. Mm. Which one was most memorable? Because those were pretty big moments in your life. I think it's over now. It's all downhill. But... Those are pretty great.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's sad because that was the last time that my kids will get to see me play and be the last time that I'm actually going to play a match on BMO, like a good match like that. So with people.
Walking soccer. So,
yeah. but all of it, you know, I couldn't just pick one. I'm walking out and 35,000 there was amazing. I think the birthday when everybody was singing, and that caught me off guard. I had no idea that that was coming. And that was a truly special moment. And I think just all of it, and the penalty as well, right? Because I wasn't going to take it. Gio was going to take it. So I'm just standing there, and then Gio and the Brazilian guy comes over and goes, hey, it's your birthday. You're taking this. I was like, all right. Now, in the back of my mind, I was like, fuck, the last time I took a penalty here, I put it over the stands. and it ended up in the water. So I'm like, just hit the target. I'm looking at the keeper, and the keeper's doing his little dance. And I'm like,
fuck, was it Julio Cesar?
No, I can't remember who it was. So anyways, I was like, I'm looking at him, and I'm kind of, you know, my mind saying to his mind, just let this go in for love of God. Please do not save this. And then I'm thinking, do I still have it in my legs to come across my body, or am I going to open up and play it? And I was like, no, I don't trust myself. I'm going to put my head down and ping it down the middle. And so luckily he guessed, he went to his left and I just put it straight down the middle. I said to him after, I said, you thought I was going in the corner, didn't you? He goes, you're a lefty. He goes, I could have swore you were going to come across your body. I was like, yeah, I couldn't. If I did that, I would have fell over.
Honestly, with all that happening in your head, it's a miracle you got it on frame.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The relief.
If I was shocked, keeper, I shocked myself. I would have stood there.
Oh, I know you would have. You drive it down the middle because he's shitting himself.
I know where this is going.
I couldn't believe it, though. Like, Jimmy stepping up to take the pen. Like, I know the guy was like, take it. It's your birthday. But you've talked about on here all the time about how much you hate taking them.
Yeah,
like, what is happening?
I don't like them. But then you see me after and I'm giving it one of these, like, yeah, I do this all the time sort of thing. But really, I was shitting myself.
When you're pointing at your back, you're actually pointing at your pants. Going, so I shit myself.
Underwear.
I shit myself.
If you could rank all the goals you've scored in your career, Jimmy, where would that rank?
Oh, it's up there. It's up there.
I bet it is.
Yeah. The technique, I was like, wow.
It's only his third goal.
It's up there.
How were your teammates? How did they fare? How's Jabinka looking? Like he always has, like just scampering around that pitch.
Yeah, he was. He was good. He's still fit. A lot of guys, and we had a couple of younger guys, which was good as well. So, like myself and Diro, Altidore. Gio, we all came off at one point, right? And then you let the younger guys go and, you know, they take the meat of the game sort of thing. And then we came on probably with about maybe 30 minutes to go to finish off the match again. And it was great. We're just warming up and we're like, okay, let's get at this again. It was fun. The guys had such a laugh. It was amazing. The banter on the pitch was great as well. So it truly was a memorable moment for me for sure. Yeah, I loved it. Really good.
Was there anybody that was served a massive reality check, like when they gave their sizing for their kit to the kit manager and to TFC, but then they actually put it on and they're like, oh fuck, I'm not a medium.
Yeah. Daniil Henry. Honestly, he looked like a doorman. Jesus, are you security or are you playing today? What's going on?
He's been eating cushions. Oh.
But he's such a, Daniil's such a great, he's the best guy in the world. He's such a good guy. But it was so funny. He goes, are these junior socks?
I'm sure the socks were the least of his problems.
I told him, I was like, Daniil, I said, look, put some Vaseline on your legs. It'll slide right
up. He's gained weight in his calves too, right?
Oh, man.
Hey, man, that's fine. I get it. He's former pros, finished playing. Like, you've trained all your career. Like, to hell with that, man.
Yeah.
Gonna let loose for a bit.
Looking what dumb. A great event.
35,000 people. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? 35,000 people to come out and see that. It shows there is a real hotbed of football in this city. And then a day later, you get 45,000 to see Messi. Now, okay. I always upset people when this happens, and I'll upset them again. But it is a bit of a testament to where we're at as a football nation, where TFC can't draw 12,000 fans most weeks. And then Messi shows up and it's 45,000. How many of them are going to be showing up, you know, when Messi retires? But we did that last year. I got in a lot of trouble for it. I don't care. But still, 45,000. The new stand. Josh Cloak wrote an article about it in The Athletic, his experience sitting at the very top. You should read it. And the comments too. People got really angry with him. It's like, settle down. But it looked really good on TV. It looked amazing.
Yeah.
That stadium packed 45,000. It just gave you a hint of what it'll be like at the World Cup.
Yeah, it was amazing. Really was. Seeing when you're at field level and you just look around and you see the stands all packed, it's incredible. It really is incredible. And like you said there, I mean, for a Friday night, you got 35,000. Saturday, TFC and into Miami, 45,000. You're right. It's here. You know, the support is here. This is a football city. They do support it. But, you know, the stands, yeah, they were steep because my son was up there sitting with his team. And when you're up there, you're looking down, you're like, oh my God, you don't want to stand. You're like, I got to sit down here because they are steep. And then we sat in the north stands, the new suites. Incredible view. Like I prefer watching the view of a match behind the goal because you see everything. You see the movements and patterns as opposed to sitting on the sides, right?
So, like your tactical view.
Yeah, it really is. But the new suites are incredible as well. Now, the only problem that they're going to have is getting out of that place when the World Cup starts, because it was a disaster after the match. Mm-hmm. People trying to get on the trains, 45,000 people all just going to the GO station. It was a mental
platform, isn't it, to get through there?
Yeah. Well, you think that you had TFC playing on the Friday, you had the Legends game, then you had the Tempo game. And the Temple play right beside BMO Field. The traffic was nuts. And the Jays were playing as well with TFC. And
and they closed the DVP for the weekend.
They closed the DVP. Took me 2 hours to get home.
Christ.
And then AFC Toronto were playing on the Sunday as well, because they're splitting, like, half of their home games are at BMO Field this year.
Right.
They still haven't managed a win, it should be noted. But Oso was talking about the quality of the pitch. So you were on it, Jimmy. So I want to ask you two things. So your perspective from the pitch, not just at the Miami game, but like being a player on there, comparing it to when you first came over and played and captained the team in 2007 and kind of seeing out the end of your career, what was it like to have that imposing fans and like the everybody on top of you? Like, did you notice a difference?
Yeah, you notice a difference when you're at field level for sure. It's a lot louder as well. It looks like a proper stadium when you're down at pitch level now. And the pitch needs plenty of time to rest because it wasn't the best. Didn't play like you think it would, but that's going to take some time to eventually get that right. But overall, I love the look of the stadium. Now, it's going to be sad when those stands come down, And then they're going to put a party zone on top of the new suites, which is going to be pretty cool. But yeah, when you look at it and you think if that was permanent, those stands, it would just finish the stadium because it looks amazing at field level.
Yeah, it does show what could be, right? Eventually, keep building this game. And it's amazing what a bit of winning does, because TFC obviously used to sell out every single week, and they'll do it again when they start winning again on a regular basis. And who knows, you know, down the line, could they do that? People are freaking out about these stands, though, and I think George is wondering how it felt like it was swaying at times. Mm-hmm. And people wouldn't stand up. But listen, I wouldn't be concerned about the thing collapsing. I know there's a lot of people saying, well, I wouldn't go up there. Wouldn't take my family. This company that does this around the world, I think they know what their shit. I think they know what they're doing. I think they understand the engineering behind such temporary stands. Okay, so I'm not going on it. I'm joking.
For $2,300 a ticket. $2,300 a ticket, too.
Oh, JC's
one,
pressing
two,
a button.
One, two, three, four.
Ring, ring, what's that sound? Big question that needs answer. Ring.
What was the question again?
Really big questions for the World Cup are every pod little segment leading up to the tournament this summer. Okay, so today's really big question is, can Canada, USA, or Mexico actually make a deep run in this year's tournament? As hosts, generally speaking, the hosts do pretty well. But Qatar didn't do very, very well. South Africa were pretty dreadful, if I remember, in 2010. But South Korea back in 2002 did really well, got to the, was it semis?
Semis.
Quarters. Yeah, right up there. So it does happen. Craig.
Wait, Charms. Can you please, and this is a, you get to dictate what is a deep run? What in your mind is a deep run before everyone says categorizing it?
For me to make a deep run in a 48-team World Cup, a deep run, it's got to be quarterfinals. Maybe round of 16 for these teams, but quarterfinals for sure is a deep run. Now, just to confirm, 32 teams competing in the knockout rounds, right? So it's a 48-team World Cup. Then it's 32 teams, 12 winners, 12 runners up, 8 best third-place teams. The round of 32 will feature a fixed... Yeah, this is the official word. This is crazy. The round of 32 features a fixed but complex bracket where 1v3 matchups are common, e.g. 8 group winners against third-place teams. The top 8 third-place finishers are assigned to specific matches. There are 495 possible combinations. So as far as permutations and pathways, I was going through this last night, who could play whom, it's kind of pointless because there's so many variations here and possibilities, but feel free if you want to go there. Craig, can these teams, and out of these teams, who's most likely, do you think, to make a deep run? And what do you consider a deep run?
Honestly, I would say Canada, if they're healthy. I think they've proved that they're the best team in CONCACAF over the last few years. I'm not sure that Mexico, I look at Mexico and the United States and even Canada to a certain degree, making it to the quarterfinals can be very, very difficult for any of them. But if anybody's got a chance, I would say it was Canada, if they're healthy. I think it's going to be very difficult for the U.S. to just turn things on from where they're at. But they do have talent, so you just never know if they can step up. But the pressures of the World Cup and everything else. And then you got Mexico, if they can potentially win their group, they stay in Mexico. And as we know, playing in Mexico, their support is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. Even with ticket prices, I'm sure they're cheaper in Mexico a little bit. But even with that, I think you're going to end up with a hardcore football fan backing. And I think Mexico would have the advantage there. Even if they're playing in the States, Mexico, you know, they're playing at home, you know, when they're in the States as well. So they're very comfortable in that environment. So they'd be the ones who would say that outside of Canada, maybe, but I don't see anybody getting to the quarterfinals.
Although it's so hard to plan a pathway for your specific team nowadays because of this World Cup, that getting tickets for, I think Mexico might be playing in this match in this stadium on this date. It's difficult, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder how that reflects with the partisan support teams will get this time around. I mean, obviously there will be I guess a resale market, not in Ontario though, apparently. But yeah, that'll be interesting. But yeah, Dubs, do you concur that it will be canned? I mean, don't forget, Mexico have in the last year or so kind of the shine's back on them a little bit with Nations Leagues and Gold Cups.
Yeah, and also, you know, trying to pressure players into reporting for camp and missing out on Liga MX playoffs, right? So that's one way to go about it, right? To get allegiance in your troops, in your squad. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, I want to go back to like how you define the deep run. Like, that's really what I got stuck on. I mean, I did follow like the different permutations, especially for Canada, which we've unpacked a little bit, but not a tremendous amount. So I'll take a glass half empty approach in just a second. So I think that when you're talking about a deep run, like Canada, you look at the last World Cup, it was a surprise participation. We scored two goals. One was arguably an own goal. We know the Davies one, but it was disappointing overall. You don't get out of the group. You don't win a match. So when you're defining deep run for any nation, it's trying to extricate it from like the expectations of the weight of the past emotional turmoil and past failures, right? It's like deep, deep scars, right? So you're trying to say objectively the path that my team can go on here and what can they possibly achieve? So I think you're right when you do it. Like, I always try to avoid math, but if it's a 48 team tournament, you have to finish at least in the top half. So beyond the round of 32, and that for me, I agree with you, it puts you into the round of 16. So now, can Canada realistically do that? I think if you look at finishing third in Group B, which is my glass half empty approach, could send Canada to either Foxborough to play the winner of Group E, maybe Germany. That's going to be incredibly difficult, 4 days off between games. Or you stay in the West Coast, you go down to Santa Clara, and you get 6 days off to face the winner of Group D. Now, who's in Group D, you might ask? Well, USA, Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. So there might be a path or a couple of different paths that have Canada encountering a fellow CONCACAF team in either Mexico, if they fare better, or if I think what will happen is they're one of these best third place teams and they're going to clash with the USA in order to go through. And at that point, maybe you get players coming off the injury list. Maybe you have a little bit more depth of squad to choose from. And I do like Canada's chances at that point. So I think it's about hanging on in order to like eke through the group stages. They have to. If they don't do that, it will be abject failure for Jesse Marsh and for Canada. But if you are able to get through, it's a tougher path, but I like our chances at that point.
This felt like a Law & Order episode, Law & Order Dubs edition. And Google. She's downstairs in the basement with the strings.
Yeah.
And like the red strings going, well, if they get here and all the maps are lined up. That's great analysis, Dubs.
Thank you.
The States are the great outlier here, aren't they, though? Because we don't really know what to expect. They haven't been great under Poch. It's been really very inconsistent. They've chosen to play these great teams in the build-up, which they're not winning. But they've had some moments and some flashes. They've got injury issues as well, by the way, but they've got more depth. But you look at their potential pathway, right? If they win the group, they're in San Francisco, I think, for the next round, and then they'll play one of the third place teams from groups B, E, F, I, or J, whoever the hell they are, right? If they win it, they play the group G runners up, I think, isn't it? They play a third place team. If they're this is so confusing.
More red string.
I think they could well play Belgium in like the round of 16 as well. Yeah. I just don't know. Mexico, I have more faith in Mexico because of their recent form, I think. Mm-hmm. And they're a tournament team. They always do well. They've made the quarterfinals the two previous times they've hosted as well. Jimmy, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are with Mexico playing South Africa, South Korea, and Czechia, I think they win the group. I think with the States playing Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey, I think they win the group. And Canada, I think we win our group. I think three teams will go to the round of 32, and I definitely think one of these three teams will be in the round of 16.
Is that, and that, would that be a deep run for you or a satisfactory run, depending on the team?
If I'm speaking as a fan of the region where I want teams to be successful and move on, because it's good for CONCACAF, I'd be delighted with that. And if Canada get knocked out, then obviously, look, I want to see a CONCACAF go as far as possible because it's only beneficial for our region as well. And I don't know why are you laughing, Charms?
No, because I don't agree with that at all. You make complete sense. And from a business standpoint and a fan standpoint and a football standpoint, you should be rooting for CONCACAF.
Yeah.
I just can't do that. I want to crash and burn.
See, the importance behind it as well is the better the CONCACAF teams do moving forward, you hope they continue to have a lot of spots in a World Cup, similar to like Europe, right? So every time they do poor in World Cups, we are limited spots. So I want them to do well in CONCACAF.
Yeah.
And that's where my head's at.
You've got plenty of spots with 48.
I was going to say, but less of an argument now.
Right. Costa Rica didn't make it.
No.
So, yeah. Would you cheer for Curaçao? Would you cheer for Haiti?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there, yeah.
Yeah,
so
see?
No, that's not for myself. Yeah.
No, I know you will, Jimmy. I'm asking Charms.
Yeah, but I'll cheer for Cape Verde as well. The smaller teams, these teams that would never normally be there, who potentially could be those giant killers and provide a fairy tale storyline. I love those teams, but not because of CONCACAF.
Is this U.S.
despite,
and Mexico?
Despite being CONCACAF, I want to see Haiti and Curaçao do well.
Yeah, what I like about that is despite, I'm very spiteful. I'm not cheering for the U.S. I'm not cheering for Mexico. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Fuck that. Go Canada.
Well, listen, there's a good chance, right? Canada gets to play Mexico or the States early in the knockout rounds, right? There's definite pathways that could see that happen. I really think that one of these teams is going to have a very disappointing World Cup. Just got this feeling. They're tough groups. I mean, Canada, we've been through it, but you know, this is not a walkthrough. Everyone's saying, oh, yeah, they'll get through. And they, I think they should if they're healthy, but they're not healthy.
And what's Bosnia's a tough group?
Tough group. Switzerland's tough group. A tournament team. And Qatar, I mean, they're in disarray right now, thank God. Mm. But we can't be arrogant enough to think that, well, there's at least 3 points against Qatar. Can't. We're Canada. We can't say that yet.
Yeah, we fucking can.
Yeah, we can. Exactly.
What are you talking about?
3-0. 3-0.
We're winning the group.
We never won a World Cup match.
We're not healthy. Look at our roster. We're completely decimated.
We'll be fine for the World Cup.
I love it. I want us to be fine. But I think realistically, we are not fine.
I think if you look at every team in the World Cup's got issues right now with injuries, we're going to be okay. We will have our players back. Our players will be raring to go, and we'll win this group at home in Canada.
Mm. I love the confidence.
So do I.
God, I hope you're right. Mm-hmm. I've just had my heart broken on so many World Cups in the past with that other team.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But, you know, and now you got a 32 single game knockout. That's, you know, one hiccup and you're screwed. And that goes along the board to everybody. That's why it's so difficult to pick a winner or pick teams that are going to go deep because of that. It becomes like a March Madness, really.
Yeah.
And you know how different, nobody's ever had a perfect bracket in March Madness. So
you and Wonger did very well this year.
No, but you know what I used? I used auto pick. Like you just put a risk. Craig went through his whole thing. We actually ended up being competitive in two pools. Really good year. But man, I couldn't pick that it's just luck. This is luck.
Charms using AI for his headshot?
Yeah. So everybody, you're going to see a picture of James Garvin that is AI filtered.
It's with six fingers.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad we have.
I didn't get to say mine. I know everyone wants to listen to it. But a deep run for me is playing in the round of eight, so quarterfinals.
Quarters. Hmm.
And the team that I see doing it from CONCACAF is Mexico. I think that you get a European team down in the heat and humidity and altitude of Mexico. And all of a sudden, what is it? Sweden? I know there's no Poland because of Sherm's confession yesterday.
Yeah.
Someone called me out too. They said, by the way, Lewandowski's not in the... I said, yeah, had he listened to the podcast?
Right.
You would have
right. And I even that. Put in, I even put it in our post-production video person put in a few moments later. Dubs, I don't know if she liked it or not, but I like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I do think that it would be amazing for them to have, because you guys played against that Mexican side with the heat and everything. And you're fighting two things, right? Not only, you're fighting three things, the crowd, the environment, and the team. And I think that can be overwhelming for one of these, like, hey, it's hot outside when it's 18 degrees up in, you know, Denmark or something. All of a sudden playing down there. I think that's going to be this is their chance. This is Mexico's chance to come back from a pretty dismal last 5 years.
Yeah, it's just previous World Cups, 32 teams. You can really look at pathways and have a real good idea. It's just, it's impossible this time, really.
Yeah.
Just because of, you know, the permutations. So just disappointing. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that when we talk about, is 48 teams a disaster waiting to happen?
So for AFC, their attack is almost for this season, before Esther's injury and after Esther's injury. They look like an attack that is missing their talisman, that's missing the connecting piece.
You're not wrong. I think it looks very different, and it's no disrespect to the other players that have sort of tried to step into that role. Cause I thought Lauren Rowe, when she came in for Esther in their previous game, I thought she was very bright. And
I agree.
We were on that game, I think, together.
That scoreless draw versus the Tides.
But like, she was very, very good from her first touch of the match. And not that she wasn't on Sunday, but I think Esther provides something different, right? Like, she is such a threat up front in a bunch of ways. So like, back to goal as a target. She holds up the ball so well. She also can turn defenders. She can go at defenders. Her free kick prowess, you know, the fact that she takes attention from other players, like, people have to pay attention to Esther. And it's not just usually one player. It's usually multiple players that she's occupying. So that opens up things for Kaylee Hunter. It opens up things for other players, right? For Stratagakis, for Zoe Burns, for Colby Barnett. It opens up things for everybody, right? So I think that's a big loss. And it's 6 weeks minimum.
Yeah. So minimum, meniscus. Right?
So yeah, it's meniscus. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I think she's due to play some games as well with Nigeria. So I'm not sure how the timeline's looking for that as well. I think in June. So, you know.
Yeah, she might be returning just before she has to leave to go play in the WAFCON with Nigeria.
And we're hoping, you know, she is a delight to call, like, a call a game with Esther in it, because you don't know what's going to happen. She does so many brilliant things. She does so many brilliant things, and it's not just the attacking stuff that she does. It's you know, she provider some games, like, it's I feel you know, it's a massive loss. And Marco was very frank about that at the news conference this week, just said it's a massive loss, and I think it affects the team deeply from a mental perspective. So they need to get over that. They have lots of talent on that team. And it's about grabbing it. Like, your opportunity's here. You got to grab it. Nobody really grabbed it and ran with it on Sunday. That's not to say that the next game somebody is not going to.
Yeah, but you're right about the halves, where the first half you saw extremely dominant AFC Toronto, the Roses, who are so good defensively, just absorbing that pressure. And then they were ready to pounce and to strike in the second half, where it was almost like an exchange of blows and like a heavyweight fight, right? Where it was only 1-0. You only had that goal by Bennett, but it's the moment of brilliance that the match was desperately calling out for. And before that, it was not only a battle and really open and transitional, but it was big save after big save. Krasaniak, am I saying her name right?
Krzyzaniak, yeah.
Krzyzaniak versus Karpenko. In for an injured Cody Yard was Krzyzaniak. And boy, did she deliver. Do you think we have a battle on our hands right now for number one?
Well, right now, I mean, if Cody Yard's injured, I don't know how long, what her status is there in terms of timeline. But yeah, I mean, I think that Krzyzaniak's, if I can say this, like just a little bit more, like they have all three keepers have good size. Like they're all, I think, in the 6 feet range, maybe a little bit above that. Sophia Manor, I think, might be like 6'1". But Krzyzaniak's quite athletic, I think.
Yes.
Positioning wise, I think she needs a little bit of work. I think she could have done better on that Bennett goal, I think.
I agree. And but I have to say,
she did make some other saves in the game.
Huge saves that I
full props to. But I think on the positionally on the Bennett goal, but I mean, that's film. That's film. That's practice. That's,
and you know, it's what, reps, right? Getting the game time.
This is just her second game in the NSL. She played one game last season, one game this season. So, you know, it's real-time game stuff that you learn from.
Yeah, but instinctively, like coming out at the right time, like we see Cody Yard like playing that sweeper keeper role. You talked about Karpenko doing that. Cody Yard, that's a strength of hers. But then the shot stopping, the positioning when she's kind of deep in her net and closer to her goal line, a lot of work to be done there. But Krzyzaniak, before that, she came up with a big save on Bennett and then another huge save. I can't remember who it was on, but like two grade A opportunities snuffed out by the fact that she was charging out of her line or off of her line and able to intervene. So that was good to see. But somebody I thought here, I mean, the Rose, again, just off the mark, brilliant start to this year. They look almost unbeatable, but I thought we would go to our best 11 and talk a little bit more about somebody else who got injured. So this is another injury dealt to Milanovic and AFC Toronto in Sarah Stratagakis. Like for me through 3 weeks has been the best player in NSL.
I'm trying to think of somebody who might be,
maybe it's between she and Bennett.
She and Bennett. Mellenhorst is up there, I think.
Yep.
Minas is up there.
Mm-hmm.
For consistency. Sarah Stratagakis, if you caught the game on the weekend, just the way that she moves off the ball, like her technical ability, I think is like, it's so good that you almost don't notice how good it is. I don't know whether that gives it justice, but like her technical ability is so good that she can make things happen like quickly, like snap of a finger, running off the ball, running without the ball, the press, like her timing when they press, it's all like, she's just so dangerous. Like she can run in behind. She can play on either side, both feet. And Marco Milanovic saying that she came in, you know, this is the first full season with, AFC Toronto coming over last year from France at the transfer window. And she came in like just sharp, like fitter, quicker.
Yeah.
So I hope it's not a long-term thing for Stratagakis. I hope it's, you know, maybe we'll see her in the next match, hopefully. But, you know, that's a pivotal player for AFC Toronto. And I'm sure they're pleased to have her for a full season.
Yeah, what I'm impressed with is you mentioned a ton of things that I agree with Stratagakis, her technical ability, her ability to read the game, to find those pockets, but it's her timing, both in and out of possession. I just think it's impeccable, whether she's helping out with the back press or numbers around the ball, counter pressing, winning the ball in dangerous areas, but it's her ability to make those probing runs and find those seams. And then you have players like Barnett, you know, if she's in that left attacking pocket, or somebody like Small, I think you have Chisholm looking to find those line breaking passes. She is always available. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they are going to miss because she's that creative link. You know, and one of these unicorn type players, that number 10 that just seems to find those spaces naturally, that is a difficult profile to come by in this league. And you mentioned like summer season joined, had an impact, but not the impact that she's having so far through three games. So I hope that the injury, when she kind of gets, I forget who it was, who fell on her off of a cross from Barnett, and it was an awkward fall. And then I think that was when she got injured. So I hope it's not long term.
Yeah. I love that you said, like, so it's like Sarah Unicorn Stratagakis. No, but there isn't a lot of profile like that.
Nope.
You know, and I know we're big praisers of Nikki Small on the show. And I thought Nikki Small had great spurts in the game on Sunday. It wasn't her complete 90 minutes that were, I think, we're used to seeing, but I thought she also had a very bright game.
Yep.
And she provides a lot of technical ability, getting out of small spaces. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they do have players that can kind of fill in that role, but I don't know what they're. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the solution is there, even though they do have the depth at their disposal. So very quickly for our audio listeners, this is our week 3 best 11. So Anna Karpenko, 3 clean sheets in a row. No surprise that she is in between the sticks from the Montreal Roses. Then our back line from right to left, Kayla Adamek from the Ottawa Rapid, who opened the scoring in that 4-0 win that they had midweek. Lucy Cappadona from the Roses, Jaleesa Harris from the Rapid, and Stephanie Hill kind of rounds out that back line from the Roses as well. Midfield 3 of Chloe Minas of the Roses, Kira Mellenhorst, who we've been talking about in glowing terms for the Rapid, and Sarah Stratagakis, the aforementioned Stratagakis for AFC Toronto. And a front 3, this is a pretty potent front line here, of Kaylee Hunter of AFC Toronto, Elise Bennett, who is on 4 goals to lead the Golden Boot race so far, and DB Pridham, the Golden Boot winner from last year, who opened her scoring in emphatic form for the Rapid, getting a brace on the day in their 4-0 win. So that is our 11. And we have to say, this is quite difficult. We only had 2 matches, so you think our job would be easier, but we had a lot of people that we had to argue about, you know, for keeping them in, or some players who didn't get in because they were bumped out by somebody else that I liked Cigna's argument, or vice versa. So was there anybody that we didn't talk about that you want to shout out, or somebody was left off that you want to tip your hat to?
I thought you were talking to our listeners, because I was going to say, I won't be offended.
Also,
I won't be offended.
Seriously, at us though, let us know who we left off, or, you know, somebody that you really want to highlight, or a mention of a player that maybe didn't make it this week. Let us know.
Yeah, I think for me, I think one of the ones that we were like maybe half debating here, Amy, was to put Kaylee Hunter in the starting 11. Mm-hmm. I saw enough menace from her this week. I think she was more active than she has been. And the fact that she searches out the ball, she's not just standing up there like waiting for delivery, and she's searching out the ball. She wants the ball. She had that cracker of a half volley that just sailed over the bar. Mm-hmm. I thought she was going to open her account there. It was a really great opportunity.
Dangerous free kick as well, where Carpenter had to be lively off her line.
Just a little, you know, had it just been a hair to the right over the wall, it would have probably gone in. I think she's on the right track. I think from, again, like I was on the AFC Toronto, Montreal game. I really, that back line right now that Robert Rossatoyou has, Stephanie Hill, Lucy Cappadona, and Valerie Seto is very, very strong. I think teams are studying that right now, trying to figure out, okay, how can we break this 3 down? How can we break them down? And then, you know, shouts to the players on, you know, coming back and helping out, you know, Megan Sauvé, who's tireless on that team, should be mentioned that she's had a really good start to the season as well.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned Sauvé, because maybe week 1, she's maybe part of our best 11, but she's
been very consistent. She's been close to cracking it, but I think for me, she's had such, like, in comparison to last season, I think she's been really, really consistent. Megan Sauvé. So maybe I'll give a nod there.
Yep. I like that. My one that I want to kind of shout out, who didn't get included, who got bumped actually by Sarah Stratagakis, even though she only played about half-ish, was Jung for Ottawa Rapid. I just think I mentioned off the top how complimentary I think that double pivot is for Ottawa, and Mellenhorst and Jung. And I just think the shuttling, the ground cover, the defensive acumen, shielding that back four, you get a little bit in what you lost in Gibson and Desi Scott in the presence of Jung, and also the game IQ, understanding when to hold, when to offer support, when to rotate in and out. You see a little bit of a pattern of play emerging with the Ottawa Rapid that we saw last year, but it just looks more cohesive now versus that opening game at Wanderers Grounds where they're building with the three. And then sometimes you see one of those double pivots join the back line, and it allows both fullbacks, say in Chu and Adamek, if those are the ones that are selected that are on the pitch, to really fly up and get numbers forward. And I think that Jung has a really great understanding of their philosophy of play and how Katrina Peterson wants them to manage the ball in the buildup. So that is what I wanted to shout out. And then I will just quickly hear. So this is our league standings after week three. So the Montreal Roses are perfect at the top of the table. Three matches played, 9 points, plus 7 goal differential. And then if you compare that, so then it very quickly, Ottawa Rapid in second, the Tides in third, who were idle this week, AFC Toronto in fourth. That might be the lowest they have dropped, Signe Butler, over the course of a season and three games, is it? I don't think they were ever below third last year at the beginning of the year.
No, I think you're right. And I just...
well, we'll mull that over, and again, correct us if we're wrong. And then Calgary Wild, again, who have struggled to open the season, missing a lot of big pieces. So hopefully they start to get bodies back and they can start to get points on the board, because they are sitting on a goose egg and a -5 goal differential. And Vancouver Rise at the bottom of the table on three matches played, -9 goal differential and 0 points for our defending champs. So lots of time to right the ship. But they need to figure it out and quick.
Yes. But yes. I think bodies back for both of those teams will certainly make an impact in the standings.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I wanted to mention, because I watched this game that you covered, the 1-0 win for the Roses over AFC Toronto at BMO. How about that howler of an own goal by Charlotte Bilbao and how she was beside herself and must have been so relieved that got called back.
So, yeah. And, you know, we were there. So where we were, it didn't look, it was a very close offside call. I'll just put it that way. Like I, from where we were, because we're up in the booth and we're looking down, I'm not at that. Like it was basically around the 18 yard box. Or just around.
Yeah, it was right around the penalty spot. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know where Lauren Rowe was. If she was, she was a step offside. Like it was very, very, very close. Mm-hmm. But Bilbao, like she slid into it and like was like
and connected.
She was
purely
confidently thinking that she was clearing the ball away. And I was like, oh my God, right in the corner.
Instead, it was one of the better finishes we've seen on the year, but unfortunately in the wrong goal. So I think she was quite pleased to see that called back for offside.
I think so.
Can you feel it? Can you feel the energy? Can you feel the buzz, the excitement, the anxiety?
Mm.
We're in the last month countdown to the World Cup.
Mm. Ew. Don't do that.
That was gross. Is that your...
when I used to climb the ropes in gym class. You know? Oh, come on. You can't tell me you're not excited about it?
When I used to chafe my upper thighs.
when I wore corduroys.
What's that sound?
Where is he coming from, that kid?
Oh my God, he's the true fire.
George stops walking. It's your suit.
Can you still buy corduroys? I used to love corduroys, so comfortable. I haven't seen corduroys for a long time.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
Yeah, corduroys.
You're saying,
are you saying cordial?
No, corduroys.
Jerry corduroys.
How do you say them?
Well, it's more. Say them? It's still three syllables, but you're throwing in like an corduroys. Like you're saying it like you're calling God. Yeah, God corduroys. In the middle of corduroys.
Corduroys, because there's a U in there, right?
Oh, you changed it. You were very French before.
Yeah. It was like, oh my jack,
corduroy.
We call them cords, call them cords.
You're passing a cord to your friend Roy.
Yeah.
Is it good, Roy?
Yeah. Corduroy. I don't know. I mean, do people still wear cords? Corduroys, corduroy, whatever you want to pronounce
them. That was better.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's still a thing.
Yeah. They're hot in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a summer pant, that's for sure.
No, it's sweatpant. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. About the World Cup.
Can you smell it? Can you feel it?
Incredible tangent.
Should we play?
You're welcome.
Let's play the little opening tune, Dubs.
I'm already sick of it, but okay.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, go!
Ring, ring, what's that sound? Big question that needs answer. Ring.
What was the question again?
It is a big question that needs answering. As this continues, every podcast between now and the World Cup today. The really big question that needs answering is, who is the next global superstar the casual fan doesn't know just yet?
Ooh.
This is an interesting one. Who's going to make their name in the global football conscience? Perhaps us nerds in the game may have heard about these players, perhaps.
Yeah.
But who will my mum know about?
Oh, yeah.
By the end of... None, because she won't watch 1 second of this. who wants to start? Anyone have a obvious one? Craig, are you thinking of anyone in particular?
Well, for the casual fan, I think it's Jude Bellingham. We know him in the football world, know him, obviously. Went for 100 plus million euros. Excellent career starting at Birmingham, Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, Champions League winner. But I think this is his moment to shine. I mean, the guy can play just about anywhere. He's excellent at control and pace and playing through presses. And I think he's a full package, a complete midfield player. And I think we're about to see that. And he's going to make his name on the World Cup stage this summer.
Wow. Hey, Jude.
Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, Morgan Rogers takes a spot in the starting 11.
Oh, then they're not going to get to watch good old Jude, are they?
Nope.
Hey, Jude.
Where are you, Jude?
Where are you? Done.
But, I mean, see, Bellingham's interesting because he is one of those players, Craig, I think, that hasn't quite hit the heights that 4 years ago we were sure he was going to hit. A lot of injuries at Real Madrid.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's right. But I mean, he's only 22. Incredibly, he's played with England included. He's played 250 matches. Like it's quite insane. I think he started at Birmingham at the under 8 level. The guy's been around for decades. But I think for the neutral, for the casual fan, I don't think they're well aware of him. And I think they're going to be introduced to him this summer, and he's going to be lights out.
Whoa.
I like that call.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a total mess at Real Madrid right now. A complete gong show. Jose Mourinho might be announced today as the returning coach. How do you think Jose is going to get on with Jude Bellingham? I don't know about that. He's got some swagger to him, does Jude. Some confidence, say the very least. Man, it could really work, or it could be a disaster.
I agree. It's going to be one or the other. There's no in between. There's no lukewarm. It's either going to be a match for the ages that's going to bring the best out of club and manager and player, or it's going to crash and burn.
Dubsy, who did you have as a next global superstar casual fan doesn't yet know about?
Our previous episode was a little bit existential. We were questioning, how you define deep run and how you define tough group. So, how do you define a casual fan? How do you define the next global superstar? So for me, I think... young. We were talking about Alphonso Davies, and he's now injury plagued. Will he kind of move up out of that? Or will it be kind of the death knell like it was for a Michael Owen? I remember when he broke on the scene and he scored that goal in the 1998 World Cup. One of the best goals in my estimation for England of all time for the men. And you see the pace, you see the power, you see the raw talent, right? So I think about like a youngster kind of dropped into this huge stage or onto this huge stage of 48 teams and becoming known. even to the casual fan. So for me, as somebody who's been around at PSG for a while now, since he was 18 and now he's 20, in Warren Zaire-Emery. Oh, so this French team is fucking stacked, right?
Yeah.
But this is a player, like, he's not only solidified himself in PSG's starting 11, but he's convinced Didier Deschamps for France to make him a regular in his squad list in advance of this World Cup. But he's 20. He's closing in on 180 appearances for PSG already. He's got about, 10 caps for country, but he's competing for a place and hanging in the world's deepest squad, right? So I think whether he's box to box or whether he's deployed as a more of a midfield anchor, a deeper lying midfielder, I don't think he's an automatic starter, but is he somebody that can, embody the game and imbue it with that youthful exuberance, but also be reliable and put his stamp on things? I think he has the ability to do that. And if he can carve out enough minutes for himself, then I think he will be a name that will be known after this World Cup.
I love that one. I actually have him on my little list here as well. It's all about minutes though, right?
Yeah.
Like, can he get on the pitch? And he could be one of those players, like you say, who doesn't start the tournament as a starter, but by the end of it, he's on there. Mm-hmm. So much experience for a young kid. Man, he's fun to watch.
What a weapon to have, though, eh?
My God, I know.
And that's, exactly. A guy like him may not start. I mean, Jesus Christ. How many countries can say that this guy wouldn't start for them right now? Not many.
No. Nope.
Maybe Spain. Right? Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. I like that one. That's a really good one. Jimmy.
Well, I'm going to go for a player that I don't think too many people know about. His name is Antonio Nusa. He plays for Norway. He's a wide player, played for Leipzig. And he is known as the Norwegian Neymar. He plays both sides. He's jinxy, fast as hell, loves to get at players, very dynamic, explosive. And this is one player to keep an eye out. He's 21 years old right now. And he is the player that I'm going to say keep an eye in the World Cup. On this kid, Antonio Nusa.
That's Nusa to me.
You bet your ass.
You know what? Also, I Norway talk about dark horses, teams that can go.
Yes, it's my dark horse.
Yeah, I like that.
That's Nusa. Some good Nusa.
It's a lot of good white players.
Nusa
this morning,
today.
Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the cool new thing. It's not new thing, but these dynamic wingers. Yeah. Every team's got one, it seems. Nusa. Huh. I need to do some research.
Not on your list, was he?
No, he wasn't on my list because it's a very short list. Yep. My work, my preparation for the World Cup began in earnest about 5 days ago. Should have been about a month ago. But I'm working my way through it. I like that. Wonga.
Mine isn't far. It was far. It was far off a while ago because this guy is, he was a dual national and he's now decided to play for Canada. And we got to see him play for Tunisia, and he impressed. So who's going to impress people and be a bit of a sleeper is Marcelo Flores. I think he's got a game.
Tunisia?
Against Tunisia.
Yeah, you said for Tunisia. That's
you said
Jimmy,
for Tunisia.
You were in the Aluminium. Studio. You didn't watch anything. We know. We know you faked it. That whole panel faked it.
No, but in fairness,
You said he played for Tunisia.
Played for a play.
That's why you
Tunisia.
Threw a curveball at us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it could have been Aluminium, who was a
exactly. Yeah. So that's who I thought you were going to say.
Oh, right. Well, he's down in Tigres, and he made his decision to play for Canada. And I think that he'll have a breakout. I think he's, he came into that match and he sparkled. And I think that World Cup is an opportunity to elevate your game, elevate your standing, and even market yourself. And with those red braids, he's one of those kids who doesn't care about standing out and wants to stand out. So that's my throw out there.
That's a good show.
I like it.
It is, yeah.
I like it.
Especially with the left wing.
He's a little older, though. He's a little older. He's 22. And like, I was just thinking about some of these kids are like 18, 17, and you're like, 22? Now you were saying kids the other day, and I asked Dubs, what is a kid nowadays? Yeah. But because he's just coming new to Canada, I think of him as a kid. He's playing on a new squad, all that kind of thing. So
he's exciting. He's an exciting player to watch.
Yeah, he is.
He does bring something that we don't generally have. So that's a good shout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And use the word sparkle, which I really appreciate, and I'm going to steal in my punditry. He might be forced to sparkle because Sharms just said it, that left wing decimated, right? Like whether, you know, Fonzie was going to play higher up. We've got Richie who's injured, Zohran Bassong, who is the one who was deployed in lieu of those two, if needed. He's got a niggling hamstring injury. So like you've got a lot on that side. By the way, somebody I forgot to load into our comment show, Ali Ahmed came off injured about a week ago. Do we have an update on his status? Because he's somebody else there. Maybe a little bit of a question mark. Probably is okay. Liam Miller doing very well for Hull City. But I think Marcelo Flores might be used on that left wing a little bit more than maybe Jesse Marsh planned.
And that's why I brought him up too, was because was he going to get a look with all these guys being healthy? I mean, it was a big deal that he chose Canada. But he's also coming into one of the most competitive positions on the pitch, right? And all of a sudden, he took that. Jimmy's always saying, you have to be ready. You have to be ready to go in. You're always being competitive. And what he did with Tunisia, even though it was a tie.
Against Tunisia.
For him to play with Tunisia.
I'm saying anyways. I think that, you know, he grabbed his opportunity and made people look at him a different way.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just no one knew anything about him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We'd heard stories. We saw him play against Forge, right?
Yeah.
In the Champions Cup, scored a goal.
Yeah.
But quite honestly, I mean, there's people that do watch every league in the world. There's a lot of people that don't and say that they do, and they're full of shit. Most of us don't watch much Tigres and didn't know much about him. But those two games, especially the one for Tunisia, he looked outstanding. Tons of fun. And I'm pretty sure when Jesse Marsh spoke to him about switching and coming out to Canada, he said to him, don't you think he said, listen, if you say yes, I'm going to take it to the World Cup.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be a selling point? Rather than saying, well, I'll put you in the mix. You better earn it. That's a pretty big, you can really leverage a player's loyalty by dangling that carrot, right?
Yeah, no question. How he uses them, we'll find out. I mean, he could be coming on, you know, good player to come off the bench when you need something in the offensive zone. He's certainly got that to unlock defenses.
Also, the versatility, right?
Yeah, both sides. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can play on both wings. And I also see him as somebody who could be deployed in not in lieu of Jonathan David, but maybe giving David a little bit of a rest if he isn't used in consecutive 90-minute performances, which I do think Jesse Marsh will do. But I mean, it's good to know that you have somebody like Flores who could play that role.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see Jonathan David up top and Flores underneath him.
Yeah, you mentioned that before, didn't you? Last time you played. It'd be interesting. A scheming number 10-ish kind of.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes, Charms.
Taking players on, find those little pockets.
We got it again. The overbite, the way we started the show.
And just,
number 10.
And Justin Ali Ahmed, there is no Ali Ahmed update. The last thing that was said was forced off at halftime, severity unknown, but he was seen limping after the match, creating concern for his availability. And there hasn't been, it says this is a developing story, no update since. So,
yeah. I mean, I think if it was bad, we'd know about it by now.
Yeah. No news is good news.
Yeah.
It is, eh? It is in this area?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Because there's probably a starting left winger that first game, I think, in Ali, especially if Fonzie's not at match fitness. There's your left winger. Anyway, I went to another dark horse, a team that went through the qualifying playoffs to get into the World Cup, and that's Turkey. But this kid, he kind of broke through at the Euros with Turkey. But Real Madrid's Arda Güler, I know Dubs mentioned it briefly in the last show. Mm-hmm. This kid's like, he's young, he's broken through into the Real Madrid first team. Four goals, 9 assists this season. And while, you know, Lamine Yamal is going to become the biggest name in world football this World Cup, and he's still very young, it seemed a bit obvious to choose him for this. So this kid, and I think he's got a hamstring injury right now. Another one. Jesus. Mm. If he gets healthy, and if Turkey can go on a decent run, get out of their group, which is quite possible, maybe at the expense of the States. How much fun would that be, by the way? I can see him really making a name for himself under Vincenzo Montella, the aeroplane coaches Turkey, which one of my all-time favorite players, well, at Roma back in the day. Mm. But yeah, this kid, he's, again, speaking of a schemer, he's another schemer in that middle of the park. So much fun to watch.
Can white I man's over, but is he going to do the white man's overbite again?
When I'm not going that far. I think I'll reserve that for Audroy's and Canadian players. Maybe some English players. Maybe Morgan Rogers. Anyway.
Good one, Charles. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Right, there's something to like either like a singular name, like a Ronaldo, like two of them, you know, these big stars where they go by one name only, whether you're in football or you're in music or just like a global superstar. But the more recent ones, like this more recent generation of superstars in football, it's the double name that you always say, right? You never hear Lamine Yamal, referred to as Yamal, or like it's very rare. It's always Lamine Yamal, Leo Messi. I will say Messi, but I more often than not will say Leo Messi. I know I'm kind of conflating generations there. Arda Güler. Like I always say his full name.
Mm. Is it something about the, what is it about? Is it about this? Oh my God. What do you call it when you have like you're sounding out the name, the consonants?
The
Arda Güler.
But like, do you mean like the phonetic, like the pronunciation?
Yeah. Is that why it kind of, it's maybe more harsh. Just Arda Güler.
Mm-hmm. Good for chanting too, right?
Yeah, a good chanting name. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I like the one names.
You like the one names for us?
Well, that's the biggest sadness with Estevao not making the World Cup through injury, right? There's one we lose out on. No one calls him William Estevao. It's just Estevao.
Yeah.
And there's one Brazil lose. That's a biggest loss for Brazil, probably. Because of his name.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe another really important question will be who's got the best name at the World Cup? I think we'll do that.
There's a lot of good names out there.
I'm enthused about it.
There's a lot of names out there.
There's a lot of good names out there. The one name, I mean, the thing about the one names is you kind of have to, there's a bet on yourself. Like you kind of have to come up with your own nickname, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're not supposed to.
That's right.
Well, yes, but I didn't come up with that. I don't go, oh, my name is Wonger.
No.
other people told me my name was Wonger, right?
But no one knows that your first name is Dan. Very few people that listen to this podcast.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Is it?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Do any of you guys call me Dan?
No.
Yeah. Danielle, so maybe Wonger's not. I like that because it makes me very British. It's those people who say, hey, call me this. And you're like, I'm not calling you that.
No, you don't get to pick your own nickname. You don't get
T-Bone. George, want to be called T-Bone? T-Bone? Yeah.
Right. You made them T-Bone.
And then they call him Coco.
Coco the monkey.
But it's true, though, when you're talking about like single names or like being known just as that one name. Like my kid's janitor at their school is not named Sting. And like the cleaning lady at the hotel isn't named Madonna. Like there's something about fulfilling your destiny as well. Even though those names were changed, I realize that. Right. Or like the old joke saying like you named your kid Jeeves. What did you expect?
Right.
Right.
maybe
a janitor with a single name might be kind of cool.
Hey, look, we had one at Glebe Collegiate where Alanis Morissette went also. And his name was Smitty. He'd walk around and thanks. And like he goes, call me Smitty. People go, hey, Mr. Smith. Nope, call me Smitty.
Oh, so see, he gave himself his own nickname and you guys rolled with it.
He was iconic.
Smitty.
Jim, my brother has a friend, right? And for the last 25 years, okay, they call him Looch, okay? I only found out his name's Kyle last year.
Well, what's his last name? Where'd Looch come from?
I don't know. I was like, so you're telling me this whole time everybody grew up together, your name's Kyle, not Looch? He goes, yeah, my name's not Looch.
That's hilarious.
Just found out. In their 40s.
If your last name is like Luchovsky or Luchenovich, that's naturally, you're always going to be a Looch. It's a good nickname.
Mm-hmm. Or Luciano. Mm-hmm. I thought he was Italian.
Oh, that's true.
No, he's not even Italian.
No, his name's Kyle.
He's a ginger.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's no ginger called Luciano.
Unlikely.
So, the World Cup, it continues, as do our really big questions, Dubs.
Mm-hmm. Not queued up.
One, two, three, four.
Ring, ring, what's that sound? Big question that needs answer. Ring.
What was the question again?
How long before that gets annoying?
Last show, I think.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
It is good. I did enjoy it as well.
Hearing Dubs do something really mediocre.
You mean like you just now?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mediocre.
But you singing is amazing to me. Because I now know that you're average at something. So it makes all of us other people.
Like you needed this most recent example to know that. Oh,
good. I mean, look, you fake go downstairs really well. You fake canoe really well.
It's true. I do.
You're drinking. You're a good dancer. We've danced a little bit. You're really good at barfing on the corners of streets. lots of really good things. Yeah. And this singing is, you're just mediocre, which I love.
But I do it with some exuberance. So there you go.
Don't try.
She's mediocre at accepting.
Shut up, turd.
Comment section. She's mediocre at dealing with that.
Oh. Yes.
Right.
At least I fucking loaded some in, James Sharman.
Yeah, well, you did. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That was back on Wednesday, Dubs. That's 2 days ago. I know. Maybe it's time to move on.
Feels so raw still. I don't know. Yeah,
we struggled for that 55-minute podcast, didn't we? Obviously, we needed more comments. Obviously.
Ring. Okay, sir.
All right, today. Oh, by the way, we'll have our footy picks later today as well for the weekend. Some big games this weekend, actually. Huge games, as this time of the year generally happens. Okay, today's really big question for the World Cup is the expanded 48-team tournament a brilliant move or a disaster? Or in between? Who thinks it's a brilliant move? Anyone?
I like it.
All right, Jimbo, you start.
Yeah, I like it.
Defend
it. I just think it gives more teams around the world an opportunity to enjoy the biggest tournament in the world. And you get teams like we've spoke about with Haiti, Curaçao, and other smaller countries around the world that would never had this opportunity to embrace the beautiful game's biggest tournament. So I like
Italy.
It.
Teams like that.
Ouch.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan when it first happened, but thinking about the likes of Curaçao and Haiti, Cape Verde, countries like that, as well as, you know, smaller countries developing and having a reason to develop and go search the globe with the relaxed rules as far as playing for countries and things like that. I think it's great for the development of those countries and an opportunity for them to get there and other tournaments as well. You know, so I think the Nations League has been good for smaller countries. And I think the expansion to 48 teams is as well.
They always want more, don't they, Dubs, these smaller nations? Look at the freaking Nations League.
How dare they?
We want more. We want a World Cup too. Just give us a World Cup. Let's make it 96 teams next time. Why not? Bring us the small teams. Oh,
they might.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's every chance.
Like, Jimmy and Forrest make really good points, and I agree with all of that. You want to stoke the development. You want to stoke the amount of money, the exposure that these players and these countries will get as a result of this 48-team World Cup. But what about the prestige? What about, you know, the fact that this is the World Cup and just everybody can go now? Well, except for Italy. But no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, I think that Dr. Claire Rusted of the broadcast, friend of the show, is a big math person, as you would expect, as being a doctor. So Claire Rusted says 32 teams is the sweet spot. And I don't love numbers. Numbers don't love me. But I know that that worked. There was a clarity about it. The top two teams moved on. Very simple. 32 becomes 16, becomes 8, becomes 4, becomes 2, becomes the winner, right? Like there's a clear path there. And in previous pods, we've tried to break down the various permutations of a 48-team World Cup, and it's near impossible to do. You can track your team, and kudos to you if you're able to do it. But I think you look at the group stage, it becomes a little bit kind of overstuffed. There's too much to keep track of. Are you as interested in these matches, given the fact that they're lower stakes, right? Were you less competitive, perhaps? You're diluting the quality with the inclusion of these smaller nations. You might get more one-sided games. Whereas the fear of the Women's World Cup with the expansion to 32, we didn't get that. So, you know, perhaps the caveat to my own argument is that with the expansion, the modernization of the game, the ability to be more tactically fluid, to have more scouting on teams, you have less depth of talent, but you might be able to compete. So maybe my whole point here is proven wrong, but I do think that the prestige is diluted a little bit with the expansion to this 48-team World Cup, and I think that maybe it's a little bit of a misstep. Do I think it's going to be a disaster? No. But I think you've changed courses, you've advanced, you've taken the step to expand, and it's too late to go back. So I do wonder about the quality of the overall tournament, but especially during the group stages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two things can be right at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But do you not think as well with the World Cup, once you get to the 16, then that's when the tournament really kicks off? Because a lot of times in the group stages, if you win your first two games, you're going to play guys that were on the bench for the third game. And then it kind of, you grow into it. But I think when you get to 16, it's the best. And that's where the tournament really starts getting good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you've got to manage your players, right? With this extra round of games, you've got to manage your players, which means with the eight best third-place teams, there's going to be some big matches late in these group phases for certain teams where other teams have already qualified and will start resting players. And that's going to bring up a lot of anger and frustration and controversy and, you know, are we doing the game justice? By rest, I think it opens up a big can of worms there.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much football to begin with, and we're putting even more on these players. Oh, thanks. Three more players in the squad. Well, that'll take care of it. I worry about the players' durability. If you're going to have some players will play every game or close to. There's a lot of football in 6 weeks coming off a season already. Don't you think there's going to be football fatigue as well from the fans at a certain point? I mean, there's going to be some shitty games. Let's not kid ourselves. With respect to the small nations, let's be honest. We're going to be watching a lot of football.
104 matches, Sharms.
104 matches. That's a lot.
We're going to be exhausted. We're going to be exhausted. But you got to think, too, like, when did load management ever really fall, unless someone was injured or coming back from injury? Ever, if everyone was fit, you'd never even think of talking about sitting people and load management, which you're actually talking about right now, which has probably never been part of a discussion about World Cup at 32 teams. Just saying. Never thought we'd be talking about load management.
Yeah, but here we are. We have to, because that is too much on these players. And many of these stars entering already with injuries and coming out of injuries. I just think it's unnecessary. I mean, it's all very well. Okay, I get it, Craig, what you're saying. And Jimmy, you know, yeah, small nations deserve a shot, a chance, right? Less money, less budgets. I understand all that. But it comes down to money. That's why they're doing it. FIFA aren't doing it to reward the small nations. They'll say they are. And that's why they've done this. It's all about money. That's the only reason they're doing it.
Yeah, but at the same time, Sharms, you know, these smaller countries, you sometimes if you don't have much to celebrate and you have a team that's gone to a World Cup, it unites a country and it brings everybody together and gives them something to cheer about as well. So for me, I like it. I like what they do, what they've done with 48 team. just because it's growing the game, it's bringing countries closer, unites people, and I think it's a good thing that they're doing that.
It's not uniting me. I'm pissed off.
There's not much that makes you happy.
You know what does make me happy? A 32-team World Cup. Actually, a 16-team Euro I left as well.
In terms of viewership, like you talked about that fatigue, it's 104 matches. You know, the strength of these matches and how relevant they are amongst, you know, this sea of distractions. And I know it's the biggest competition in the world, but you spread it out. There's so many matches that maybe are meaningless, throwaway matches people don't really care about. And as Jimmy said, like maybe people only start to pay attention, you know, at the round of 16. Even the knockouts aren't even a conversation starter because most people get through, or most big teams that people are following get through. And sorry to the smaller nations here. But I mean, the beginning of the tournament, aside from these, and Wonger, you love this from a marketing angle with these kickoff parties and like the, whether mm-hmm. it's in Toronto or it's the US or it's Mexico, and you have all of this buzz with the superstars performing to bring more eyeballs on it. But then you lose all those eyeballs for the first 14 days of the World Cup because nobody gives a shit about the group matches. I'm not saying that's the reality, but that's the risk with the expansion.
I will say also that we are looking at this through the lens of people that are in the business, in the industry. We're going to watch mm-hmm. every single match. Yeah. The average fan isn't going to watch every single match, mm-mm. I don't think. They're going to watch their teams and maybe some big matchups, right? Mm-hmm. We always look at it through that, as Dubsy's favorite term, the echo chamber of our world. And it's so true. Which isn't always the average fan. Hardcores, maybe. Some people actually have to work for a living and won't be able to watch those afternoon matches because they'll be at work, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that, I suppose. I'm trying to find a reason to say it's a good idea. But can you imagine, Wonga, the scrambling, those final group games, trying to figure out who the 8 best third place teams are?
Yeah.
It's going to be ridiculous and frustrating and annoying and extremely confusing.
And it goes back to, you know, the head-to-head, the how many goals, the goals against, the goals for, and basically who has a pimple on their ass that day. And like, honestly, it's you're then put in this position that is purely mathematical, and it's kind of like throwing darts with a blindfold on. Right now, Jimmy could get a bullseye. I would only get a 20. But Dubs, who's also mediocre at dart throwing,
it's true,
would miss the dartboard. So this is, I mean, it does become kind of that. Yeah, but it comes, hey, you're not really, it's almost like, and I don't mean to insult you guys, Gold Cup 2000 flipping of the coin of how you getting into the semifinals or the quarterfinals, right? Like it was, there was luck. And yes, you need luck to advance in all types of sports, but there is a level of, hey, how many mathematical permutations do we have to go through to see who's going to be the third place team in each group? So you're right, Charms.
Yep. Theft.
I don't know if I'm against it.
A Gold Cup was a theft.
I'm going to give you a comparison that I don't know if it hits, but I think it does. It's, and Craig knows how much I hate this, it's the NBA play-in for the playoffs. After you play a certain amount of games, they go, hey, not only is the 7th and 8th team allowed to go in the playoffs, you're now the 9th and 10th team. So this kind of feels like that, where a team wouldn't normally be on the precipice of a World Cup, but they're then invited in because we've made this such a larger tournament.
You mean like the MLS playoffs?
Oh, yeah. That's the same.
Yeah.
Well, it's being changed now, though, isn't it, this year, a little bit, I think.
Is it?
I believe so.
Like, you have your World Cup, your Nations Cup, you have all of these pre-tournament qualifiers, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, we're extending it this big now. And and then, like, what we were looking, Sweden versus the Italy getting in, and you're like, how did that happen? And it happened because of math.
Bosnia.
Mathematics. Bosnia.
Math.
Nations League, yeah.
Yeah.
So can we, I guess we can all agree now that it is a disaster then.
Maybe they should go to 64 and just the top two go through, and then that'll solve your problem.
Yes.
There you go. You know, I'll be more open to that, I think, actually. 128. Like March Madness, a true March, well, not true March Madness, I suppose, but at least March Madness is a huge bracket. But at least you know, you win, you're through.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments if you'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Oversaturation. Right? And swollen, just like Jimmy's eyelid when he had that sty.
Yeah, this
that hurt.
Like a sty.